people aren't fully aware of the sleepiness cues. Yawning, right? Eyes getting heavy, brain starting to slow, muscles starting to relax. When that happens, then you should go into bed and ideally fall asleep within 15, 20 minutes.
This is Mastering Menopause. By using fitness, nutrition, lifestyle, and mindset, you can master your hormones and get your body back. I'm Kathy Cote with Catalyst Fitness and Nutrition. Let's get into it.
Welcome back to Mastering Menopause. Today, I am joined by Dr. Valerie Cacho. She is an integrative sleep medicine specialist, a wellness consultant, and a writer. And her interests and expertise include diagnosing and treating medical sleep disorders during perimenopause and menopause, women's sleep concerns, mind-body approaches to insomnia, self-compassion training, clinical hypnotherapy, and promoting sleep health and wellness. She is the president and founder of Sleep Life Med, which is a telesleep practice in Hawaii and California. And additionally, she is the CEO of Sleeporia, a online educational and sleep wellness company for women. So welcome, Dr. Val. How did you interested in sleep science?
Sleep. Yeah, it's really interesting. So I grew up in a medical family. My father is a physician and he was pretty busy. He's an interventional cardiologist. So he would not sleep very much because he would be in the hospital all the time doing procedures for people who had acute heart attacks. And I decided pretty early on, I didn't want that life. I knew I wanted to be a mom and have kids myself. And So I was always interested in science. You know, I think science was pretty fascinating. But I was also interested in lifestyle. So looking for a certain lifestyle that wouldn't necessarily need me to disrupt my sleep. And so looking at sleep medicine was pretty interesting. I had a family friend, one of my father's friends, give a talk about sleep medicine. And it was really interesting to me on how there was this whole like lifestyle part of health, specifically around sleep, and how it can impact things like our diet, our exercise, our nutrition, our blood pressure, our risk for diabetes. And so that's how I really got involved in it. A, I didn't want to work crazy hours, but also B, it was just interesting to learn about sleep. Yeah.
Excellent. So do you have like a certain group that you particularly work with, or do you just kind of work with whoever has like sleep issues?
Yeah, great question. So in my practice in Hawaii and California, I get referrals whoever needs help with their sleep. A lot of times it's adults who snore, stop breathing, or their partner can't sleep because they're making a lot of noises in their sleep. So we talk a lot about sleep apnea. I have seen kids as well. I used to run a pretty busy sleep lab. But yeah, currently I do a lot more of consultations. And I really like focusing on insomnia for women. What I saw throughout my years of practicing sleep medicine is that there was this sort of gap in care. So women would go to their primary care physician saying they couldn't sleep. They would get on a sleeping pill. Maybe it would work for a little bit, or maybe it wouldn't work, or maybe they would read side effects about it and want to get off of it. And then they would land in my office, or maybe they would see their gynecologist and have difficulty with their sleeping and be offered maybe some hormone therapy or some sleeping pills, but then also maybe feel like that wasn't the full answer. So then I get a referral for that. And when we take a look at sleep science as a whole in medical school, we only learned about 2 hours of it. And same thing about menopause, you know, the general physician's training in these two topics is really minimal. So it makes sense that there's this huge gap in knowledge for the general public and also among doctors. And so, you know, being a woman myself, having my own difficulties with sleep, it was just something that I was pulled to. And I'm really passionate about teaching women how to sleep better.
So yeah, can you give us some tips on that, especially as we're going through transitioning through perimenopause and menopause?
Yeah, and I think my first and biggest tip is prioritize your sleep. You know, our culture today is so, I think, overwhelming. I think there's so much asked of women. And I think women always tend, I mean, just me personally, through seeing women in my life and women I work with, tend to give to other people before they give towards themselves. You know, it's, you know, you can't pour from an empty cup, and sleep definitely is the cup that gives you the energy, right? It fills your battery charge. I was just writing about today, you know, some of the sleep challenges that women go through. And definitely hormones are part of it, right? You know, when you wake up in a hot flash or a night sweat, sometimes you're drenched, so you have to change your clothes. I mean, that's really disruptive. But even aside from that, women have higher rates of anxiety and depression, and that can play a role in our quality of sleep. Social factors, you know, women are pretty much the caregivers for their families, whether it be their kids, if they have young kids, or even elderly parents, on top of having their own careers, on top of managing a household. It's almost no wonder, right? There's a lot of challenges that can come up. And there's only so many hours in the day, right? We all have 24 hours. And if we're, you know, getting stuff done for our kids, for our parents, for our job and our work, and then our household, by the time it's bedtime, what happens for a lot of us is, you know, we tend to steal away from sleep. So we're borrowing some of that time. And what I really want to encourage women to do is, if you're actually getting better quality of sleep, right, then your mood is better, your energy is better, right? Your work performance is better, your productivity is better. So it's going to make it easier to do the things that you need to do versus sort of like operating on, you know, lower batteries. Yeah. So prioritize sleep is big. Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. I hear all of that, right? We take on so much and we're just so busy, and we don't prioritize ourselves sometimes. And sleep tends to be one of those things, you know, like, you know, you stay up later, maybe trying to catch up on Instagram or whatever. And then that is going to, like, what do you think about, like, what is ideal for sleep as far as time? And then like, what would be that best, like, wind down practice?
Oh, great question. And I think, Kathy, I want to make the distinction. So when I work with patients in my medical practice, I see a lot of people who have insomnia. And so that's a medical sleep condition where you have a hard time falling asleep, staying asleep, associated with some daytime consequences. Mm-hmm. And I want to really preface that and separate that from maybe the healthy adult woman who has a hard time sleeping maybe a couple nights a month or a couple nights a week due to more sleep habits. So there's definitely a big distinction between the two, because when I make some recommendations, it depends if you're in the insomnia category or more of, okay, maybe I just need to optimize or switch up some of my sleep habits. And then going back to your question, so I'm sorry, what was it talking about, what to do at night or?
Yeah, like the optimal hours of sleep to get the best way to kind of set yourself up for your best sleep.
Good question. And the way I think of sleep, think of it like fuel, right? You know, if you're a marathon runner and you're training, right, you're probably going to need a different type of macronutrient composition than someone who, more like me, is a little bit more sedentary, sits behind a screen all day and talks to patients, right? As a whole, adults need 7 to 9 hours of sleep in terms of, you know, best function. Where are you along that 7 to 9 curve? It really depends. And I really take an individualized approach, because maybe during the work week when I, you know, have patients and I have meetings and I have things, you know, deadlines accomplished, I probably, you know, need closer to 8, 8.5 hours versus on the weekends, right? When, you know, maybe we're just going to hang out at home because it's raining outside, or, you know, just going to go, you know, do some errands, may not need to be as sharp. So can I get away with 7, 7.5 hours, right? You know, I'm not super rigid in saying you have to get, you know, 8 hours of sleep every night, because then that puts a lot of pressure on us and almost, I think, makes us feel like, you know, we're not going to be able to accomplish that. So why even try? So I encourage people to take an individualized approach and be your own little sleep scientist. Okay, how much sleep do you need to feel good? And what does that mean? Are you needing an extra cup of coffee in the early afternoon, or feeling like you need to take a nap? Or when you're coming home from work, are you just crashing out on the couch because you haven't gotten enough sleep, right? So that's really important. Find out how much sleep you need, ideally within 7 to 9 hours, but for heart health, meaning if you want to prevent things like a regular heartbeat, high blood pressure, heart attacks, or stroke, getting at least 6 hours is important. Yeah. So 7 to 9 is ideal, but if you get less than that, try not to go dip down less than 6. And then the other thing too, is we all have built within us the circadian rhythm, our internal clock. And so oftentimes people who come to my practice, you know, come in because they're referred for insomnia where they can't fall asleep. And when I ask them about, you know, their sleep schedule, it's like, okay, I'm trying to go to bed at 9 o'clock because I have to wake up at 5. I have to get ready, you know, do the stuff for the kids and then, you know, be at work by 8. And then one of my favorite questions to ask is actually, are you sleepy at 9? And then what time do you sleep on the weekends? Because if they're not tired at 9 and their true bedtime is actually close to midnight, guess what? For 3 hours, they're basically tossing and turning, getting mad at themselves, maybe scrolling Instagram, Facebook, or, you know, YouTube, trying to figure out how to sleep. And it's a matter of their clock isn't ready to go to sleep yet. So this is actually a sleep condition called delayed sleep phase. And so you would know this by maybe taking a little sleep diary, doing, you know, being a sleep scientist yourself and saying, okay, on average, when do I start to feel sleepy? And I encourage people to notice the physical cues, right? When you're hungry, what would you feel, right? Maybe lightheaded, maybe you feel like a little rumbling in your stomach. Some people aren't fully aware of the sleepiness cues. Yawning, right? Eyes getting heavy, brain starting to slow, muscles starting to relax. When that happens, then you should go into bed and ideally fall asleep within 15, 20 minutes. So going back, you know, how much sleep do you need? Somewhere ideally between 7 to 9, but if it's more than 6, that's okay too. And then go to bed when you're tired.
Yeah, that seems like kind of obvious, but, yeah. but some people ignore that, you know.
So. No, right, because we're overly stimulated. You know, we have access to almost anything at our fingertips, right? You can, you know, order food to be delivered to you probably within half an hour from your phone, or you can even have your groceries delivered to you. So yeah, it's having that, I guess, knowing when you're sleepy, but also creating a boundary. You know, one of my also favorite things to teach patients about this, and it sounds pretty simplistic, is, you know, well, what do you do when you go to the gym, right? You exercise. What do you do when you go to a restaurant? You eat. So what do you do when you go to bed? Are you on your phone? Are you checking email? Are you texting people? Are you listening to podcasts, or are you sleeping? Because ideally, when you see your bed, you want to create it as a really strong magnet for sleep. When you think about sleep associations, you want to associate your bed just for sleeping. So sometimes people who have a hard time sleeping because, you know, their brain doesn't want to relax, right? Or they're just running through their to-do list, you know, encourage someone to do those activities outside the bedroom if they have the opportunity. If not, you know, just put a pillow on the floor, sit on it, and then wait till you feel sleepy again, and then actually lie down in your bed when you are sleepy, because you really want to make your bed just as a place for sleep and intercourse.
Yeah. How do you know when it's more of a serious issue? Like when you might need to like get more professional help? Like when does it become a problem? Like what are the things to look for?
Yeah, great question. So when is it more of just, you know, poor habits versus an underlying medical condition? Well, we're going to talk about obstructive sleep apnea, because this is something that is underdiagnosed in women. And this is just by nature of medicine being really biased against women. You know, a lot of the research is done among men. So what obstructive sleep apnea is, it's a medical sleep condition where the muscles of your upper airway, typically it's your tongue or the muscles in the posterior oropharynx, the back of your throat, just relax when you sleep. So going back to perimenopause and menopause, when we start to lose estrogen and progesterone, everything starts to get a little bit more floppy, right? And so at night when you're sleeping, if your muscles relax a little bit too much to the point where your airway starts to narrow and you snore, then that's a concerning symptom, right? Because what happens if you're snoring, the airway could be even more collapsed where you have decreased levels of oxygen. And that can be a signal to tell your brain, hey, it's time to wake up and breathe. And so, you know, your airway opens, you wake up and breathe. Sometimes you know this because you can wake up choking or gasping, and sometimes you don't know. And for women, we wake up just unrefreshed. We wake up with a headache. We wake up with more mood instability, mood irritability, and you don't have to snore to have this. So that's definitely a number one thing. I think number two is that
if you're enjoying this podcast, I'm wondering if I could ask you a small favor and leave me a review on this podcast. This is going to help me get the word out to more women just like you, and I would appreciate that so much. Thank you.
If you're starting to feel unwell during the daytime, and that can look like a lot of different things for different people, right? Mentioning needing more caffeine, needing to take naps. You know, for some people, it's just their memory, right? You know, I'm talking to this person that you know, I work with her for a while, and I just can't remember her name. Or I'm reading this email and I'm reading the same line over and over, and it's just like things aren't computing. Brain fog and sleep disturbances can go really hand in hand. And so that's something to really encourage people to look into. Falling asleep in meetings, hopefully it doesn't get to this point where you're falling asleep and driving, but that can be also a big concern. And then also, you know, as women are getting older, we have more health conditions, and so high blood pressure, right? And thinking about not getting enough sleep as an inflammatory condition, it can actually affect our blood pressure. Sleep apnea can if you have decreased levels of oxygen, but also not getting an adequate amount of sleep can contribute to that as well. So if you have a heart condition and if you have any type of daytime symptoms and cognitive concerns, talk to your doctor about it, because it may just be a simple sleep study that you can do at home, but also, you know, actually have a checklist about this, you know, things to talk to your doctor about if you're chronically exhausted, because it could be a vitamin issue. It doesn't necessarily need to be a sleep condition. Sleep is a big piece of the pie, and I'm biased because I'm a sleep doctor. I think it's a large part of why women have low energy, but it could be, right, blood sugar issues. It could be a vitamin deficiency. It could be a thyroid issue. Right? Or it could be, you know, an emotional thing, right? Or stress or anxiety or depression. So there's a lot of things that certainly can play a role. But if you just don't feel well and it's been going on, you know, I think 2 weeks is too long, right? Then you don't have to suffer in silence. Go talk to someone about it.
I'm going to drop the link in the show notes to that.
Oh, wonderful.
To that questionnaire, which it has a nice checklist on there, and to see, you know, if, you know, you are chronically exhausted, like what are the things to look for and things to ask your doctor about. And I'll put all your links as well. Where can we find you?
Yeah, thanks, Kathy. So I'd say the best way to find out if you want to learn more about just women's sleep health is sleepphoria.com. That's my website where I have different articles. Also on Instagram, sleepphoria.health, where you can see some of the live events that are coming up. I also give free live webinars about different sleep topics on my YouTube channel, which is sleepphoria.health. Yeah, okay. So all of the resources that are available are free. Yeah, and I just really want to teach women how to get better sleep, because it's so important. And there's just a lot of gaps in knowledge out there.
Yeah, and that's true, because it's, you know, you go to your doctor for these helps, like, I'm not sleeping well. And then they just give you a sleeping pill when that's not really addressing the root cause of what's going on. Like, that might help, but that's not something that you want to be on forever, right? To rely on. So
exactly. No, it's very, 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 very true. I think of sleeping pills like pain medications, right? Sometimes they're really helpful. You know, maybe you're going through a really stressful situation, you know, maybe your partner's sick, or you're sick, or your family member is sick, or you're grieving. It can help. But long term, right, you know, does it really fix it? Probably not, right? You know, going back to the menopausal woman, sometimes actually just being on hormones can help. It can help with our hot flashes. It's good for bone health, can help with our mood disturbances, and can help with sleep. And it's not necessarily something that you need to be on for long periods of time. And if you're not interested in being on hormone replacements, there's a lot of natural supplements that can also mimic estrogens, right? They're called phytoestrogens. Mm-hmm. And so that can also help support someone's sleep. Yeah. And the symptoms of perimenopause and menopause.
Yeah. I know for myself personally, like, hormone replacement therapy did help hugely with my sleep, because I was having terrible hot flashes and night sweats and just waking up and just, but my sleep quality wasn't great either. I was having trouble going to sleep. And so estrogen definitely helped. And then progesterone helped me with the sleep piece. So
no, I'm glad that you got help. Yeah.
Because that's important. You know, it really did start to affect my productivity, mm-hmm. you know, running a business. I'm like, I'm just so tired. And I knew that I'm like, yeah, this can't keep on keeping on for sure. So
right. Yeah. So true.
So thank you very much for coming on. I appreciate it. And I will link all of the links. And yeah, if you have any questions, please reach out to either myself or Dr. Val and, you know, take a listen to one of her webinars and see if that's, you know, something that you might need more help with. So thank you very much. I appreciate you coming on, and I will see you soon.
My pleasure. Thank you, Kathy. Have a great rest of your day. Sleep well, everyone.
Bye.
Bye-bye.